Such a joy to be able to sing of the praise and the goodness of God. I want to turn your attention to Mark chapter 9 tonight. Mark chapter 9. And we'll commence to read the passage that starts in verse 30. Then they departed from there and passed through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know it. For he taught his disciples and said to them, "The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And after he is killed, he will rise the third day." But they did not understand this saying, and were afraid to ask him. Then he came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What was it you disputed amongst yourselves on the road?" But they kept silent, for on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. And he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "If anyone desires to be first, he shall be the last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and set him in the midst of them. And when he had taken him in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me." Now John answered him, saying, "Teacher, we saw someone who does not follow us, casting out demons in your name, and we forbade him because he does not follow us." But Jesus said, "Do not forbid him, for no one who works a miracle in my name can soon afterwards speak evil of me. For he who is not against us is on our side. For whoever gives you a cup of water to drink in my name, because you belong to Christ, assuredly, I say to you, he will by no means lose his reward." You know, one of the amazing things is that as you read through the Gospels, you find that often Jesus was dealing with questions or asking questions. He asked questions of the disciples. He asked questions of the crowd. But here, we have Jesus speaking of what is to come. And yet there were questions in the hearts of the disciples. They were thinking, not listening properly to what Jesus was saying. You know, that's so often the case. Nearly a fortnight ago, I was doing a Bible study. And the Bible study was on the book of Titus, and I was dealing with Titus chapter 1. Now, I knew full well that one of the people within that group in the Bible study was an elder of their church. And of course, with tongue in cheek, I chose Titus to do the Bible study, and chapter 1 deals with the qualifications of an elder. And I thought, now here's my chance. I can say all those kind of things that otherwise I wouldn't get to say without hurting them. And so I did the Bible study, and I thought, well, the mark of how well they have heard what I've said and what God's word has come to say to them will be reflected on what happens next Sunday and during the week when I meet them. And you know, amazingly, there was no change. They were just the same people. You see, if God speaks to us through his word, it should change us immediately. You know, I remember the day when God called me to preach the gospel. I'd already told him, as I said this morning, no way was I going to be a pastor, no way was I going to be a minister, no way was I going to preach. But God put his finger on my life one Sunday morning in a service, and he said, stop dreaming, stop pushing around, get on with it. I want you to preach the gospel. I didn't say a word to anybody. My father was the minister in the pulpit, but it wasn't through him, and it was nothing to do with him. He didn't even know for about 40 years afterwards what had happened on that day. And you know, I pushed it to the back of my mind, and I thought, perhaps it's me. When I got home, because I was on holiday, I got home. I went to work. I came home that evening, and the local evening paper was there. And as I picked it up to read it, one advert stood out as if it was set on fire. Wanted, pastor for a church. And I just had to stand there, and without saying anything to my wife, I just said, Lord, this is your doing. It was a long way away from where we lived. It was two bus rides. And I went on this particular evening with preaching for a view to becoming the pastor. I was naive. I didn't ask many questions. I just preached the sermon and went away. And a few days later, I got a letter to say, we accept you as our pastor. And so for the next 12 months, I was the pastor of that church. You see, God has a way of putting us on the spot. And that's what was happening here. The disciples were dragging their feet. Jesus was leading the way, and he was walking through, and the disciples were dragging their feet. And they were at the back there, and they were having a quiet discussion on their own, thinking Jesus didn't know what was going on. And they were saying to each other, well, who will sit next to him when we get to heaven? Who'll be in the top place? Will it be John? Or will it be Peter? Or will it be... And they were discussing it. And if we read in another part of it, two of the brothers were arguing about it as to who would be greatest. And the mother went up to Jesus and said, which one of them is going to be greatest? He said, that's not for them to know. You see, even today, within churches, a lot of the problems within the church is because there are people within the church who want to have authority and God has not given it to them. And I say this quite honestly, some of the greatest problems that churches have are because people are seeking to be something that God has not called them to. And so I want to look at a theme that I've got here at the top of my paper, is the way of greatness. If you want God to bless you in your service for him, then there has to be marks in order for you to receive his blessing. Let me take you back to just before the Last Supper. The disciples were sat down for the meal. They'd walked from the local village into Jerusalem. Jesus had sent some of the disciples around the dusty streets of Jerusalem in order to get the things they needed for the Last Supper. And they all came and sat down there. And Jesus went and got a bowl of water. And he put a towel round his waist. And he knelt down at the stinking, sweaty, dirty, dusty feet of the disciples. And he washed them. The first mark of a person that God can use is a person who's willing to do the dirtiest job for him. I don't know whether I've ever mentioned this before, but one church I was in up in Lancashire, there was a lady who used to come to the church, and quite honestly, if you stood within 2 foot of her, you would be feeling sick. She wasn't the cleanest of ladies. And yet one dear lady would regularly, Sunday by Sunday, would sit next to that dear old lady. And she'd make it her duty to be there. Mind you, she did have an aerosol under her feet, so every now and again she squeezed it with her foot so that she could. But she was determined. She was going to be next to that person. That person wasn't going to come into the church and feel like an outcast, feel like somebody that nobody else wanted. She had it in her mind, and I can remember her saying this on one occasion, she was someone for whom Jesus died. And he loves her. And I've got to love her too. Have you been in that situation where you've been next to somebody and you could wring their neck sometimes because they're so obnoxious? They upset you so much. But if my Saviour could bend at the disciples' feet to wash their feet, can't I love someone who's unlovely to the world? You see, dear friends, the mark of being a Christian is that we love people that the world will not love. And we love them because Jesus died for us. And if he died for us, he died for them. And if we don't welcome them, what does that say about us as Christians? You see, Christianity isn't just enjoying yourselves. Oh, I enjoy Christianity. Remember, don't get me wrong. I get thrilled when I'm in a big service and I'm singing praises like I was yesterday. I enjoy listening to the Word of God being preached with power and authority. I love to hear it opened up for me so that I can learn things that over all the years I still haven't discovered. But that's not what it's all about. God has called us to be servants, not masters. So the first thing in Mark chapter 9 and that passage that we read, if anyone desires to be first, he shall be the last of all. Paul puts it in another form. Paul writes this. He says, esteem others better than yourself. In other words, put others up there. Letty will tell you, we've got a choir in our church. And we've got one person who loves to sing. He's not very good at it. He's even worse than me. But he loves to sing. So a few months ago, I said to Philip, I said, Philip, what? I'm putting you in charge of the music, Philip. You get it out, get it to everybody where they're going to sit when we're practicing, and you gather it up and put it away afterwards. And he does it so efficiently. But it makes him feel as though he's needed within the... Do you know what he does as well? He empties the dustbins every week. What a job. After we've had Jamie's gang and the pizzas have been left over and half-eaten cakes and all that kind of stuff, he dumps them all and puts it all in the bins to go out. He'll have his reward in heaven. He stands at the door on a Sunday and hands the books out. You see what he's learnt, what it means to be a servant. He's learnt what it means. You see, we're not dealing with the world's ways. Let's get it clear. You've either got to have get up and go, or you've to have influence, or you'd have riches to get on in this world. That's not the way that it works in the spiritual kingdom of which we are part. It doesn't work that way in God's family. Quite a number of years ago, I was talking with my children, and it was an occasion when all three were together, which was unusual. They're not often together. They're all three there together, and I said, "Now then, I want you all to know what's going on." And at that time, my wife and I had made our wills, and we'd also made out a power of attorney. And I said, those two, the two younger ones, I said, you have got power of attorney. You've signed the documents, everything's done, you've got the responsibility. And my eldest daughter turned around and she said, well, I'm the eldest, you know. You see, she thought she had authority. But I said, Lynn, how long is it since we saw you? And she looked at me. I said, it's 15 years since you came home. And you're only home now because your mum is ill. I said, you haven't earned the right to be top dog. You see, in God's kingdom, in the family of God, we are all equal in God's sight, yes. But some he has called, and others he has not, into certain avenues of service. And we need to seek and we need to find what avenue of service God has given us in order that we might fulfill his purpose. We've got a famous saying in our church now. Ever since somebody has preached on it, it goes around. Every time we meet, we start discussing what we're going to do, the same old phrase comes out. God's got a plan. It's not mine. It's not the elder's plan. It's God's got a plan. He's got a plan for your life. He's got a plan for my life. And all I need to do is fulfill God's plan for me. How do we serve? There are some simple ways. Evangelism. Oh. You. Me speak to other people about Jesus Christ? Me share my faith? Why not? Come on, ladies. In Barrie a few months ago, I got up on a Wednesday morning and looked out of the window, and down below where it had been a building site, you couldn't put a piece of paper anywhere that way up for cars. A new Astor had opened at 12 o'clock. The whole of the area knew that it was there. So, you know, we can gossip and talk about all sorts of things, but we can't seem to talk about Jesus. We can't seem to tell others of his love. Do you know, it's quite a strange thing. But Jesus has told us we will be his witnesses. He hasn't said, will you be my witness? He said, you will be. So what kind of witness are we? Do we give an impression that just because we go to church, we're better than everybody else? Or do we look at people and say, Lord, let me see them as you see them. Give me eyes, not human eyes, but give me eyes like your eyes. Let me see through the facade. We're listening to a young man, well, one day young man, he's just retired at 65. And he was sharing with us what God had done with him. He'd had his own business. He had his own family. He had everything. His brother, on the other hand, from the same family, was a mess. But somebody found him and tried to bring him round. He was in drugs and all sorts of things, living on the streets in London, and they found him and they took him home all the way to the north of England and tried to reunite him into his family. He left again, and the one that was speaking, his brother, was saying, and it started to affect me, and I lost my business, I lost everything. But he said, one day this same person came to my home. I was still living at home. And he came to his home and he said, they were sharing that they couldn't find their brother in London. He'd gone back to London again. And she said, I found him. And she walked into a cafe in London to have a cup of coffee. And there he was, sat at a table. And she took him home again. The young man that was giving his testimony said, when I got into a mess, that same woman took me to her home and told me of the love of Jesus and showed me the love of Jesus. What a tremendous thing that is. That same woman, when she was a young girl in university, used to go from Coleford in the Forest of Dean and take clothing and food to London for the homeless people on the streets of London. Today, at some 80 years of age, she's still working amongst drug addicts. I was only talking to one of the men who worked with her, a brother, when I got home this afternoon. I'd been able to give him a gift on Wednesday, And he was telling me how thrilled they were because the night before, the husband of the girl, a woman now, of course, the husband had been praying for the amount of money that was in that envelope that I handed over. That's what God does. Spreading the good news. Do you use your home? Do you use your home to reach others for the Lord? One of the marks of an elder and of a deacon is that they are hospitable. In the early church, they used to open their homes and invite people in. They wouldn't have communion as we did this morning. They broke bread together from house to house. They use their homes as centers of evangelism. What a challenge. Now you may come up with all sorts of excuses. I don't know, that's not my job to tell you that your excuses are not valid. But if you can use your home for him, that's an avenue of service. Do you spend time with other people? Young Christians? You know, when I was a lad, we used to have women in our church where my father was, and every one of those women had a young person that they took under their wing. A lovely phrase that they used to have. They used to call them mothers in Israel. There was a lovely phrase. And they would make sure that you were taught. Not only your parents, but these dear ladies would take you under their wing. I can always remember Mrs. Jones, just two or three doors down from the church. Her angel cake was to die for on a Sunday afternoon. When I went there for Sunday tea, every Sunday, me and her son spent our Sunday afternoons after Sunday school in her house, and she would teach us beyond the Sundays, what had been in the Sunday school. She showed us the way to serve the Lord. There's so many different ways that you and I can be evangelists. We can use our homes. We can use our talents. You know, one of the things that is difficult is that people don't like to volunteer for jobs. But there's so much that God wants us to do. There's an old hymn that says, "There's a work for Jesus, ready at your hand. 'Tis a work that the Master, just for you, has planned." God has got a plan for you. Are you fulfilling it? You see, I come so often across people. I was talking to a man last night. He has his own ideas about music and everything else, and he was telling me exactly what he felt and everything else. So finally I said to him, "Well, where do you go to church?" And he told me where he went to church. But he says, "I'm not very happy there. I'll go there on a Sunday morning, but I'll go here or there or there or there or there or there or there." I said, "So are you a member of the church?" He said, "Oh, no, I just go." I said, "So you've no commitment." What God is looking for is for men and women to be committed to his work and to his service. You see, dear friends, when we are not in the house of God, amongst God's people, the rest of them are missing out. Oh, I'd say, that sounds a very proud attitude. I said, no, it isn't. We're part of a body. And if we're part of the body, you know what it's like if you've no thumb. Well, maybe you don't, but you soon find out if you lost it. Or no arm. You'd find out that there was something missing. You couldn't do the things you wanted to do. And it's exactly the same with the church. We need to be committed. We need to be fully involved. The church where I was pastor, when my wife died, I was never there. The only thing I ever did was open the door on a Sunday morning. And if I was coming here, I opened it at 10 o'clock. Their service started at 11, and most of them didn't turn up till about 5 to. So the church was empty and standing open for about 55 minutes every Sunday morning, or sometimes even earlier. If I was going up into Mid Wales, then I would leave at 9 o'clock or earlier in the morning to be there for a 10:30 service. I wasn't committed to the church, and I couldn't be committed. But where I am now, shall I tell you very quickly? I'm out today. Tuesday evening at 6 o'clock, we have Jamie's gang. 7:30, we have a Bible study. Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock, we have coffee morning, followed by lunch, followed by a prayer time, followed by choir practice, followed by a sisterhood, and twice a month, we have a Wednesday evening engagement, Letty and I, with the special group. Then on Thursday morning, we're in Bible study again. On Thursday night, we're in prayer meeting. And on Friday night, I've got choir practice with the male voice choir, and then it starts all over. I get 2 days in the week when I haven't got a meeting. Now, I'm not saying that to boast. Just to say this, that I have committed my time to the work in that church. And they can ask, and if I possibly can help and do anything, I will do it. Because God is looking for people who are prepared to get involved. Serve others out of kindness. Ephesians chapter 4 verse 32 says, be kind to one another. Be kind. Oh. Dear a friend of ours, when we lived on the Isle of Man, she would once come into church on Sunday morning, and at the end of the service quote, I've known it happen on a number of occasions, she turned to her husband and she said, Jimmy, I'm going to faint. And her husband would turn around and he says, you can't faint here. So she'd straighten herself up, go the 3 doors down the road, go into her front room and faint. And I was complaining about this particular person sometime to another dear friend. And they said, look, she's there to test your holiness. God sometimes put people in our ways to find out how much we love Him. And that love is demonstrated by how we love each other. And sometimes the awkward customer is placed there so that God can let you see just how much and how far you love Him. I mean, let's face it, look at the motley crew that Jesus had around him. 12 men. One betrayed him, another denied him, All the rest stood a long way off when he needed them most. And yet they were his disciples. They were the closest to him. Are we like that? But there's something more important. And that is my attitude. Not a word I particularly like, because attitude can say all sorts of things. But I want to say this. Jesus had a lesson to teach the disciples. And he used a little child to do it. Do you know we can learn much from our children? So very, very much. But the thing that Jesus tried to teach them was humility. You know, somebody once said to me, I made a remark on one occasion, and they turned around and they said to me, oh, I can see you're humble and proud of it. Do you know, there are some people that are like that. They pride themselves on their humility, but they make sure everybody knows that they're humble. That's not humility. You see, what is it possible? What is really humility? Well, we've got to be open to opportunities. How often do you get up in the morning and say, Lord, give me one person to speak to today about you? Give me just one person that I can speak to and share the good news of the gospel. And then reach out to people who are different from you. I love coming Sunday morning. I love the idea of the flags on here, because I can immediately recognize some of them to know that there are so many different countries. Well, we've started betting a bit that way now, because we've got a young man who's married an English girl, admittedly, but he's from one of the Arab countries. And we've got two Latvian families. And it's lovely to see them come in, and although they haven't a great deal of English, it's great to see them. And then they've got me, who's English, you see, so I'm an odd bod for a start. But you know, dear friends, do we accept strangers easily? Do we make them really welcome? I know I'm speaking more or less to the converted, because everybody is. I mean, you walk in here on a Sunday morning and everybody is welcoming everybody. But you know, there are so many churches. Well, if you haven't got the right kind of clothes or the right kind of skin or whatever it is, you're not welcome through those doors. Humility. I remember I asked my church in Barry, we just had some new windows put in. We had all these lovely windows in, and the design of the building was such that they had to grind the concrete on the window frames. And so the whole of the room was filled with concrete dust. You can imagine what it was like. And I said to them, right, what we're going to do, we're going to clean the church. And we're going to clean all the walls. We're going to paint the walls, paint the radiators, clean the floors. It'll look spick and span. And I said, and I want you all there. Do you know what the marvelous thing was? They all turned up. The older ladies, they painted the bottom half of the walls. and the men painted the top half of the walls. None of us touched the ceiling because it was far too high anyway. But you see, everybody took a part. Everybody got involved. And you know, that's one of the things that we can do. I remember my sister coming one day. We were sat down to lunch, 12 of us to lunch. And the phone went. And my sister said to me, you're in? I said, well, I'm on the end of the phone. I must be at home. She said, well, can you put two up for lunch? We already had a dozen round the table. And I just turned to my wife. I said, can we deal with another two? Oh, she says, that's Yvonne, my sister. So I said, where are you? She said, we're in Aberdeen at the moment. We've been invited to take a weekend services, but they haven't provided us with any meals on the Sunday. So I said, oh, come on down. And there was a lady sat there. And Margaret walked in, two knives and forks, shifted everybody up and put two sets of knives and forks down. And this lady looked at her and said, what on earth are you doing? She said, oh, it's Tony's sister. They're coming. Her and her husband are coming down for lunch. How are you going to manage? Well, it's easy. You'll get a bit less and they'll get a bit. Are we that open when somebody's in need? Are we ready to meet people's needs, whether they be physical or spiritual? That's the challenge of God's word. A servant heart, a servant hand, a humble heart, and a humble hand. Jesus came to the world, this earth, in the form of a servant. Humbled himself to the point of death on the cross. And then he was exalted high above every other name. Dear friends, if you're looking for your reward here on earth, remember the words of Jesus. They that have their reward on earth will not receive it in heaven. May the Lord.